Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Illumination Radio, here to inspire you to go deep, deeper into your roots, to go back into your true self. As you seek within, you will discover real health, joy, and wealth. As you travel through space-time of your own heart-mind, you will come to recognize you, and only you as master, knowing that deep within your soul lies every attained goal. Yes, everything you've been after. Greetings, this is Tamara Westwood, your host. We all know what the problems are, but here at Illuminations Radio, together, we seek solutions in every aspect of life, from health and spirituality to relationships and finance, and everything in between, with a variety of guests who are making a difference and shining examples in our collective adventure called life. Recording live on Blog Talk Radio from Seattle, Washington. But wherever you are in the world, join us live by logging into blogtalkradio.com/illuminations. Join the chat room or call 347-838-9577 to join in the conversation, ask a question, or just say hello. Or listen 24/7 by subscribing to the free podcast at the iTunes Store. Search iTunes Podcast for Illuminations, healthy food for the mind, body, and soul.
Oh, yeah. Welcome, and thank you so much for joining us once again here on Illuminations Radio. This is Tamara Westwood, your host. And we have a very powerful, enlightening show this evening. We have the author of The Pure Heart of Yoga. The author is Robert Butera, Ph.D., and he's the founder and director of the Yoga Life Institute and the publisher of Yoga Living Magazine. But before we bring our guest to the floor and introduce him to the family, first, I've got to thank our sponsors, because without the sponsors, we wouldn't be able to bring you this wonderful information. I'd like to thank TamsHealthyKitchen.com and also NewBodyHerbShop.info. Both of those links are right here on the profile page, so I invite you to stop by and visit those links. A lot of healing information about nutrition and herbal healing, the natural way to health. But now that we've thanked the sponsors, I'd like to just thank our author, Robert Butera, for joining us. Thank you so much, Robert. Welcome to Illuminations Radio.
Thank you, Tamara. How are you?
Oh, we're great tonight. We're glad that you could take time out of your busy schedule to be with us.
Well, certainly a pleasure. And, it'll be nice to share a little bit about yoga with your listeners.
Oh, I would love that. I have some very enlightened listeners from all walks of life, and everyone is studying spirituality and growing, you know, in leaps and bounds. We may have some questions as we go on, and they ask some wonderful questions.
Fantastic.
So first, Robert, to enlighten our family about you and a little bit about your history and your passion. Obviously, you have a great passion as well as a great knowledge about yoga. If you could give us a bit about your background and perhaps a bit about the history of yoga itself.
Sure thing. I was an overseas student in college and ended up transferring to a place called the Friends World College that has students study in two different cultures. And ironically, when I was in Taiwan, I was learning a lot about vegetarian food, and the people who owned this one very healthy restaurant were yoga practitioners. And I didn't join, I later found out, and some people may know in the past, they're not as popular these days, there were various yoga cults. Do you know about that? And that scares some people from yoga. And I was with a very friendly one at first, and I received one-on-one instruction from one of the monks for 6 months. And he came to my apartment where I was as a student, and he taught me how to meditate and do a few yoga poses, as well as kind of teaching me about the whole lifestyle. And when they started to pressure me into joining the organization, I felt a little uncomfortable, but they had taught me this wonderful art of yoga.
Right.
And what's that?
Oh, I was just commenting on what you're saying. Sometimes there's a little bit of a delay because of because we are online. So
fantastic.
Right.
No problem. No problem. So what I wanted to share with that is originally when someone learned yoga, and you want to learn a little bit about the background of it, it was taught one teacher to one student, that you were just mentored. And that I had later in my studies overseas, been recommended to continue with yoga by a wonderful man in Japan, and I went over to India as like a personal study trip out of college, and I was told to try to have that original one-on-one training, and I went to a place called the Yoga Institute and was fortunate enough to have a six-month experience where I was tutored at what would be like a yoga school. But I was able to have that one-to-one teach, one-to-one study every day. And I bring this up to share a little bit of my background, but also to let folks understand that yoga is designed such that it can mold around a person's needs instead of the other way around.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying? I'll continue a little more with that.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, when you go to a yoga class, typically the reverse happens where the student tries to follow whatever the yoga teacher is doing in the class. And what I wanted to say is I think you may have gone to a class once or twice, as we were talking earlier, and sometimes the class won't always fit your needs either. They could be going very slow for somebody who's very fit. They could be going very fast for somebody who has an injury or is a little bit out of shape. And that can be an immediate disillusion to learning more about yoga. So I wanted to, at first, let everybody know that there's many forms of yoga, and the yoga practices are applicable to everybody so long as you can find one that suits your needs.
Well, you know, that does pique my interest again, because as we talked before, I do have some limitations with joints and neck and all from some accidents. But I think now I'll just begin, you know, a search for a class that would fit my needs, now that I know that that is possible.
You know, and I hear that, and that's why I say that to folks. Sometimes, you know, you hear yoga, and then everybody has their interpretation. When I first started teaching a number of years ago, that little image of the cult was popular, and now the fitness image is more popular. Everybody thinks you're going to do yoga, you have to be really super fit. And,
right.
You know, both of those are extremes. And so a second thing I wanted to share just a little bit in general about yoga is that the other, if you will, misconception is that yoga, when we say the word yoga, that we mean yoga poses. And the word for yoga pose is called asana, if you, you know, take the Sanskrit word. And I'm not going to use many Sanskrit words, but to show you that yoga, the word yoga doesn't mean yoga pose. It means a study of practices that connect one from their lower self to their higher self.
Uh-huh.
That's really the definition of yoga. So I think of the word yoga and the practice of yoga as more of something more like an umbrella. Then you have yoga postures as one of the spokes. Is that what we call those support lines on an umbrella? You know, one of the spokes
right.
of the wheel, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm getting from the book, the beautiful book, the Pure Art of Yoga.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm gleaning from it is all of the psychological benefits,
mm-hmm.
The healing modalities that you put forth there. They're just really beautiful. I think everyone should take a look at this book. You can actually find it right here on the profile page. If you're looking at it here online, you see the image of the book. You can actually click there to go straight to Amazon to get the book. But it's a very powerful read, and the clarity is astounding. I found it really a wonderful read.
Well, thank you.
You know,
So when we talk about the practice of yoga poses, then one of the points, again, to give folks a little understanding of how yoga works as a process, there's a famous eight-step path or an eightfold path that's written from thousands of years ago in a book called the Yoga Sutras, which means the rules of yoga. And in this ancient textbook, one part of it, you'll find these eight steps. And the first two parts of the step have to do with lifestyle. So all the things that you're teaching people would be the prerequisites, trying to eat right, to rest properly, have positive attitude, all the things that we would say make for a, you know, quote, healthy life, they're actually the prerequisites to doing yoga poses. Did you know that?
I didn't. I got the impression, and I'm so glad that you're opening this up, because I got the impression that the poses were to bring that about.
Right.
The poses
were
to help you to
right, and
to
that's the way, aware. And again, you know, I come from somebody who, you know, had the benefit at a young age. I guess I was 24. I was living in India. And then I came back and did a PhD in the field of yoga. So I've had a chance to meet some wonderful people and learn so much from these folks and be, you know, guided in a very clear and good way. And what they'll tell you originally, like if you're going to have that one-on-one study, you have to first be a positive thinker, accept yourself, be willing to, for example, be humble enough to take criticism, be willing to examine your past, all the types of things that we would say would be, again, part of a healthy life where you're able to release any negative emotions and have a level of forgiveness in your life for whatever difficulties you've suffered. When you can kind of hit a point with that, that's actually the point where you begin doing the yoga practices that then, instead of just taking you from a stressed out place to a kind of middle level place, you've already started with less stress and you go, if you will, you start to soar the heights with the yoga practices.
Hmm. Okay, that makes much more sense to me.
Right, because
beautiful.
If, for example, if you don't get a good night's sleep tomorrow, does it matter if you eat right?
Really, no.
I mean, it's you know, it helps to eat right, but if you don't get a good night's sleep, and I mean, you know, you're staying up too late and you're maybe misbehaving
right.
a little or whatever, you know, and then it just, there's nothing you can do when you're not having those foundational pieces in place. So that's what we work on.
Right.
And then you start to do the yoga practices and it really takes hold in your psyche. Then there's further steps without, you know, outlining the whole thing on the radio here, but the further steps would lead toward meditation. So there's a step on deep breathing and understanding your body's energy, which is called prana. Then there's a few steps on how to understand ways for quieting your mind that then leads you into meditation and higher states of consciousness.
Well, you know, I would love to look at intention, because
sure.
I really find it really, you bring out a really clear understanding here where you speak about these three people who are utilizing yoga for very different reasons. You've got Mary and Laura and Steve here
mm-hmm.
in your book, and you're talking about the intentions in back of, you know, what they are using the yoga for.
Mm-hmm.
Could you touch on that and how we can maybe guard against going down the same road?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. If there's a process in yoga, as I was saying to you guys about the first two steps, where you're trying to minimize your stress, and there's a way of linking your pain, which we would say would be your stress, to your spiritual life. And there's an image, I don't know if you've heard, it may be a Christian image of something like Henry Nouwen, a writer, talks about the wounded healer. Or
yes.
mm-hmm. there's images where when we have a crack or a break in our life, and almost to a person, all of us have had a difficult time at one stage in our lives or another. And it's in that very break where we're humbled, we look within for answers, we have to dig deep. And there's almost, as I look at it, like a little bit of a crack, and from that crack comes the light. And that crack opens us up to the spirit, because we have nowhere else to look at that time.
Right.
You see, you're
kind of
whatever it is, you're failing out of school, you get divorced, you lose your job, and you're feeling a little hopeless, and there's nowhere to look, and you finally say, okay, and you surrender, and you start to see the light of God or the spirit. And in that same spot, you have your weakness, but you also have a chance to tap into your strength. So yoga looks at... What's that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I was just saying, an opportunity, yes.
Exactly. It's very hard to sense the opportunity when you're in the middle of the storm. Mm-hmm. But it's there. And what I try to do when I share how this teaching of intention works is you follow your pain, and then the yoga tradition teaches us to figure out what would the absolute perfect thing be that would heal this pain and strengthen me. What would be my light? So, for example, something simple as the traffic. If you're stuck in it every day and you feel annoyed by that traffic, we would say, okay, why do you feel annoyed? Well, you always had to wait as a child, and so it goes back to some childhood thing that you never liked, waiting for your younger brothers and sisters or some kind of thing, and so you've tended to become annoyed. So patience is just the perfect thing for you. If you only had patience, the rest of it would fall through.
Okay.
So now your intention becomes patient. That's the light in the midst of your little traffic jam. And so you use the traffic jam, and you completely change your attitude, and you start saying, this 20 minutes a day at this little one little juncture on the highway is going to teach me more about patience than anything else.
Uh-huh.
How's that sound?
I love that. I mean, it's right there. I mean, it is.
It's right there.
The
so, you know, your kids are driving you crazy, and you're like, more patience. Now, whatever the thing
right?
may be. You know, my spouse is doing this, and I really need to have compassion for this stage as he goes through this something or other, or she does this or whatever. And then you change the situation that is definitely difficult. It's not necessarily saying the traffic is a fun thing, but your attitude can shift dramatically, and you can not be controlled by your external circumstances, but you can learn how to pull the internal in.
Mm-hmm. And you can use that, use the negative as a tool
exactly.
to bring you to where you want to go. Well, you know, Robert, a lot of people, because of these economic times, a lot of people are facing downsizing. They're losing their jobs. There's a lot of financial concern.
Mm-hmm.
Where would someone find that light in that darkness? What would be that answer?
I hear you.
Because you wouldn't say that that's greed, you know?
It's not greed to want to have.
Right.
It's not greed to have a roof over your head and food.
Right.
The inspiration for somebody, what I say is, it's not a one size fits all again. It would be to look at. So you lost your job. To take that and go beneath it and ask yourself, what is the real core of how you're feeling? And if you're not able to, you know, it can be a time to talk to a counselor or someone to help you if you're on a really tough one like that. But if you can get into what is your feeling in that situation and then cut beneath that to what's the essence of that feeling. Why are you choosing to have that feeling? See, one person might be worrying. Oh, my God,
right.
What's going to happen to the future? Another person might be angry. They both lost their job. Mm-hmm. They both have the same mortgage. They both have the same family. Yet one has an angry reaction, one has a fear reaction. Mm-hmm. So that's where you have to individualize this and think, if I was somehow going to shift this, use this situation to really wake me up inside, take it from, again, this externally negative situation into a positive, look at the 5-year plan and say, I'm probably going to have a job by then. This will pass. What attitude can I use now to prove how strong my spirit is? You see, and that's the type of thing that then helps you find the job, because you'll feel energetic. You with me there?
I am. You feel energetic. You are in a vibrational place of receptivity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if you perceive the loss of the job as a negative, then you're basically putting yourself in that negative sphere. Now, I don't like to fall into some of the hype. There's a little bit of success hype, I think, in some popular spiritual literature that if you just think a certain way, a job will materialize. Well, I think it's think a certain way and work your butt off, and then the job may actually come to you. But the working hard part, I think, and the struggle, the effort side of things is sometimes left off when we listen to certain popularized messages where people are trying to sell a lot of books instead of tell it how it is. So it's not necessarily easy, but you sure can think of some really deep spiritual purpose and let that be your identity instead of how big your car is. You see, instead of how much money you have in the bank. That stuff, it's necessary. I want everybody to have a job and to have a little savings and so forth, but having a big house is really not important. Things like love, compassion, peace of mind, those are the real important things. Ask any billionaire and they always tell you that.
You've spoken gold. And I know that so many of my listeners are going to really appreciate that and be able to glean, some light there. Because when those things show up in life, it does allow you to take a look at yourself. And you mentioned, is the person wrapping their whole self-worth around having this car or this house or the status that the job gave them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so then maybe that's what they need to examine, is where they're putting their worth and rework that.
That's right.
So opportunities show up. I mean, we can look at them from an earthly view or from a spiritual view that some God gave you this as an opportunity, or perhaps it was just time. You called it forth because you needed to grow. Who knows where it came from?
That's right.
It shows up. But I'd love to, I really enjoyed the way that you applied those three people. We talked about Laura, Mary, and Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of touches on what we were just speaking about, the intention in back of getting into yoga, and that we want to look at that because the end result will not be so pretty depending on that intention. Would you go into that a bit?
Do you mean that if somebody doesn't really have a positive intention, they'll evoke something else, or?
Well, as you were moving towards in the book about you know, and about how one is doing it because it is what's fashionable.
Okay.
The hot yoga because they want to stay young and they want
Right. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can definitely. So I was also, I was going to try to bring then how the yoga poses fit into this equation, of course.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll go and do those both directions. I had a situation once when I was in India that I was to give a tour to a woman who was a yoga teacher who was visiting that location. And I walked her around to the different parts of the, you know, yoga school where I was staying, and I showed her where things happen and so forth. And we got to one room, and there was a relatively young woman doing some extremely difficult yoga poses, things like, you know, where you put your foot in a strange place, touch the back of your head with your foot, and all these hard things that I wasn't able to do myself.
Contortionist.
Yeah, she was kind of, but she was just doing, but for that was just normal for her. She was probably a gymnast or something, and she was just doing her thing. Didn't even know we were watching her. And the lady asked me, is she an advanced practitioner? And now, granted, I was kind of one of the, almost like a staff person at this point. I had never met the young woman doing these poses, so I didn't know who she was. And then I thought, ah, this lady's a spy, and she's testing me. This is a test, you see? And, of course, the lady wasn't doing that, but I kind of thought it was a candid camera moment where I was being tested. And I said, well, the only way we would know if she's really advanced in yoga is if we could be inside of her mind to see what she was thinking about and where she was focused. And, ironically, if she was doing those poses in order to show off or to keep her figure trim, because she thought if she keeps her figure trim, people will like her. You see, or she won't lose her marriage if she keeps her figure trim or something like that. Well, if her thoughts were around, if her thoughts were like that, we don't want to squash them. We just want to expand it a little. And we would say she would be making her nervous system a little stressed out. You see, she'd be worried about her figure, and then she'd be propelled to do more exercises. And she wouldn't necessarily be happy with those exercises. So she'd be cultivating an unhappiness because she was examining herself as an external physical person versus her internal spirit. So that would be what we wouldn't recommend.
And
what we could say to her is we could say, do you know, if you do your exercising from that point of intention that we discussed earlier, that you want to be beautiful, so we're going to say that your soul is beautiful and you're going to get in touch with your soul when you do yoga. She could still do her yoga, but now her nervous system isn't worrying about what anybody thinks. She's now getting in touch with herself, and she's using her time to do her yoga poses, which can be physical, but to also be spiritual. And then her nervous system is actually experiencing something completely different, while on the outside it may look the same.
Intention.
You get that point?
Yes, indeed.
And literally, her brain, her blood chemistry, you know, this hasn't necessarily been scientifically proven specifically in this situation, but if somebody's worrying and creating a level of tension in their body, I don't think we need a scientist to prove this for us, that her blood chemistry would literally be different doing the same yoga position. And I've, of course, helped people in the past. I once helped a gymnast who was writing her thesis on stretching for her college degree, and we added a chapter on breathing, and as soon as we did that, her whole demeanor changed, and she relaxed. You see, so the mindset is extremely important when you're doing your yoga poses in order, ironically or paradoxically, in order to derive the most physical benefits, you want to have the deepest mental benefits, mental focus, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So anything, I mean, that intention and back of it, if that intention is rooted in fear, the outcome is not going to be the same no matter what the process is. You know, I've found the same thing with, you know, we talked about the healthy food for the soul.
Yep.
We've talked about the herbs and what I do. And many times when people are so stressed, I can't eat that and I can't do this and I've got to go 50 miles to this particular store and it has to be this, they're building up so much stress and fear of what's going to harm them rather than focusing on the health benefits. There's a whole different outcome.
I hear
added
you.
Added stress.
Now, does the food not taste different when the grandmother cooking it is singing her songs and loving the food? Does it not
it
taste
sure
different?
Does.
Same
it
amount
does.
Of spices.
Loving it.
Same heat. Same carrots. But it just comes out somehow differently.
It does.
And I'm
it does.
And I'm
my
I'm really
grandma put her foot in it.
And, you know, there's nothing as good as grandmom's cooking, and it's partly because, yeah, she does know a few tricks, and, you know, but she's just happy to be there. She's happy to be with her family, and her life is such that all her love is dedicated there, and we feel it. We can't explain it.
Yeah.
But that's certainly the same thing that, as we've talked, you go into the yoga class with such an attitude, you find something that suits your needs. And now, instead of it being a discipline, like, oh, I want to go do this yoga or go to my exercise class because it's good for me, that's kind of a punishment. Like, oh, I'm going to do it because
yeah.
it's good. I'm going to do it because I'm going to love every moment of being there, and I'm going to charge my batteries up. I'm going to refresh my soul. See, then I love going to the yoga. So there's no discipline really needed.
No. No, that goes right into attitude.
Yes,
the
it
attitude
does.
Has shifted about it.
So
I love it.
Yeah. So we just keep on moving here, moving to attitude. So it's a topic in the second chapter of the book, and when someone does the different yoga positions, you see they call them yoga postures. And when you look up the word posture in the dictionary, it speaks of a bodily attitude. And when you look up the word attitude, it talks about posture. You see, so
yes,
look at someone's posture, and it's
yeah.
also communicating something. If they're
yeah.
if they have their head in their hand, their chin in their hand, and they're looking up at the sky, well, they're thinking about the future. And if their eyes are looking down, well, they're trying to remember what they studied last week for their test, or they're thinking about the past. See, we know that, right? Somebody's smiling and kind of being bouncy. They're just feeling a little high about some really good news that just came in. So our posture expresses various emotions and different attitudes that would lie beneath that. So when you study the different yoga poses and you open up the various different parts of your body, you're releasing any pent-up energy, and you're essentially purifying the attitudes that would be expressed in your body.
Powerful.
It is, actually. I mean, this is something that has been proven scientifically. If you sit in an awkward position at a computer, kind of hunched forward, you're not going
right.
to feel good at the end of the day. Because it's an attitude of like being beaten down or being, you know, having a weight on your shoulders. And then you don't breathe fully. So your oxygen level is actually lower. And your rib cage can't move. Your back starts to hurt. And that posture kind of puts the attitude in your system. Whereas if you're smiling all day long and you're looking, you know, you're seeing things in a good light, and you're keeping yourself open and fluid, you'll feel good. It's almost that simple.
It really is. I mean, even when you think about it, I mean, just the mere act of smiling changes the way you feel.
It really does. I mean, and that they do that has been proven. And it's not that we're going to say it's perfectly fine to feel sad or whatever feeling you have. We're not saying suppress that. But
right.
We are saying that when you're not in the midst of your emotional processing, to just, instead of hitting life, instead of coming at it with some low energy, you might as well just be super positive. And the yoga poses, again, give you a chance to work out whatever may be in your system so that when you finish, you will have experienced a variety of positive attitudes, which leaves you in feeling very balanced and energized when you're finished.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you stretch your spine in every direction. You open up pretty much nearly all the muscles in your body. You get the good breathing in. You have some time for quiet in the midst of a busy life, the kind of just literally having a quiet time when you're doing the yoga allows you to reflect and, you know, put things together. So the attitude becomes a very powerful piece. It's not talked about in a lot of yoga classes, but of course, very important.
It certainly is. And, you know, something that you just said, the quiet time, it's an opportunity to slow things down a bit. You know, in what I do, I'm a hypnotherapist, and I work a great deal with people with addictions, smoking, alcohol,
mm-hmm.
you know, other things that people do, food.
Mm-hmm.
And that's generally what I'm finding people are in search of. They're trying to find something.
Huge.
And the cigarette does it, or the alcohol, or the food is what gives them that time, that pause, so to speak.
That's true.
You know, and just imagine if everyone can do something that's actually going to benefit them, their body, their biochemistry, the psychology.
Mm-hmm. One of the things we often speak about, or one of the beautiful things the yogis speak about in terms of addictions is they never blame anybody, because they say whatever substance a person uses or overwork, even whatever the thing is that somebody does in excess,
right?
It has the effect, of course. Usually, it's trying to avoid some negative emotions.
Right.
It's kind of covering something up. And
there's some discomfort there. Yeah.
Right. And so when you do this thing to an extreme, it allows your mind to kind of move into a different place, so you're not feeling that pain. And it gives you a different perspective to some degree, but the addictions typically don't allow you to develop any strength, but they give you a momentary relief. And the yogis think that...
always destructive. Yeah.
Yeah, they're always destructive, right. So where the yogis don't put someone down is they say, you need that. Everybody needs that relief. Everybody needs a new perspective. But then, of course, what they're saying is do something constructive, like go for a walk or a run, or, you know, do your yoga practice, go into a deep relaxation, go meditate. And let it be an uplifting thing that allows you to have a new perspective. And then that can help transform your difficulties, as opposed to just putting them on hold for a little bit.
Right.
But I really appreciate how they don't put anybody down for doing the addiction. They say, yeah, well, we all need something. It's just a matter of directing what that is.
That's it. And that's the same standpoint that I utilize too, is that we all need that.
Definitely.
All need to have that time, you know, and just finding something that's going to benefit.
Absolutely.
A great comment in the chat room. Warlord X is saying, a new subject that I have to read about. So, yeah, this is a very interesting subject.
Sorry, Warlord X.
Yeah, it is. Warlord, you're going to love this book. You got to check it out. The Pure Heart of Yoga. It's written by Robert Butor. He's our guest this evening. And this would be a great time if you'd like to call in and ask a question or maybe share about your experiences with yoga or get your questions answered. You can give a call at 347-838-9577. But until then, I get to continue to ask questions. I love it. You know, I'm interested in the locks and seals. You know, I've learned a little bit about, I think they're mudras or hand poses and things. That's so fascinating. Could you go into that just a bit, please?
Sure. Well, we have 10 steps in this book, and I think you're up around 7 or 8 with this type of question. And typically, yeah, it's okay. We can definitely get into it.
Okay.
When you go into the pose, just to give a little background, you are more or less going to need to go through some certain basic steps before trying to do these more advanced things. And I always tell everybody to go one step at a time. If you're learning yoga poses, you know, learn how to do them physically first. Learn how to breathe in the poses. Learn a little bit about the intention that we've discussed. And then start to notice, you know, different subtleties. You don't have to do everything at once. You have plenty of time. But later on, say when everything is flowing and you've learned yoga for a year or so or what have you, and you've really gone after it, and now you're looking for a new something to do, the positions in which you place your hands and fingers can change subtly the experience of the practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it might be easiest for us to just talk about a simple prayer position so that people might get a sense of what we call the mudra or symbol. And if you think of praying, most people will put their hands together. How do you pray, Tamara? Where do you put your hands?
Well, I'm constantly in a state of prayer. So.
All right, how about a big one?
My palms are placed together, usually under my chin. And I have my,
Okay, great. So there's some evidence that when your palms are placed together, that the two sides of your brain function a little better together. Like the brain kind of, there's some minor evidence to that. And, and, you know, so putting the hands together has a physiological reason. But I've watched people pray with their hands reaching up to the sky, and they're not touching, and their prayers are pretty powerful too, right? And then your hands can be in different locations. So what I like to clear up with everybody is that the hand positioning is symbolic, but the symbols have a ton of power because our mind believes in them. And our mind says, my hands are under my chin right now, my palms are together, and nothing else is coming into my mind but this prayer right now. And I'm going to pull in every part of my faith in this moment because the hands trigger me to put my mind really into this prayer. You follow me?
I
like to tell people if they want, like, what kind of light comes out of your heart? A bright white light? And if somebody sits around and visualizes a bright white light going out of their heart all day long, I don't think much is going to happen, but if they go across the street and they do something nice for their neighbor, I think a bright white light's going to pop out of their heart.
There we go.
So I tell somebody, if you're just, you know, So the hand symbol, hand gestures are symbols that get the mind to become really concentrated with what you're doing.
Right. So again, faith without works is dead. Got to do the action. Yeah.
I don't know if that's what you were looking for, but we went on about praying a little bit.
That is. I mean, that was the perfect example.
Because, you know, you can read certain books where there's you know, maybe a little bit of a, how do you say it? Well, I guess I would just say that when you're thinking about talking about energy and health and so forth, it doesn't always have to be more complicated than just literally, you know, being kind to your neighbor, being, mm-hmm. you know, learning how to face your own emotions, taking responsibility for yourself. Some simple things have profound effects over your decisions and your choices for life. You know, if you learn how to overcome some stress, it's much easier to eat right and feel charged up and motivated to go try out a yoga class and see if it doesn't help your back or whatever else you need.
Good point. Well, Warlord has got a question here.
Go ahead.
In the chat room. The question is, are there any connections between yoga, acupuncture, and hypnotism, et cetera?
Well, yoga, acupuncture, and hypnotism. One interesting point with hypnotism is that when you do get in a meditative state, very relaxed state of mind, it has similar characteristics.
Hmm?
You could probably speak to that. Yes.
Right.
And when you move your mind into those places, the yogis will say it's very important to have that intention right by your side, because that will sink into your subconscious more readily when you're in that receptive state. And it's. I often like to tell, when I train yoga teachers, that they need to be very careful at the end of a yoga class to really allow people some space to just experience that without any interference. So you don't ask a student, are you going to join our expensive retreat at the end of a yoga class? Do you know what I mean? Like, you're gonna sign the check today, because
it's not the time.
You'll either turn them off, or they might just impulsively write you the check because they feel so good. And either way, you want it to be a clear decision. You want to just give a person space. So there's a connection there. And whenever you're dealing with states of mind, like you said, the brainwaves. In terms of the acupuncture, that comes from China and, you know, the ancient healers. And there you come up with a bunch of theories, but evidently yoga was, how did you say, they have records of yoga from about 5,000 years ago, where they have a statue of a person meditating in an obvious yogic kind of fashion, and there's some ancient scriptures from that date back that far. And you have the same thing with acupuncture and Chinese medicine. So, you know, there's a lot of talk that kind of in that Himalayan region, that a lot of those ancient, what do we call them? They often call them seers, you know, S-E-E-R-S, okay. Or sages, visionaries, prophets, mystics, that they often communicated to one another and would study with each other and make a journey to another land, a foreign land, and they would learn from one another again. So we don't know directly of those things, but we know there was discussions happening. It's just the acupuncture is the Chinese version. Yoga would be the Indian version.
Powerful. Thank you. That's a great mm-hmm. answer. Now, back to the locks and the seals, the mantras. Why would they be called locks and seals? It sounds like there's a closing off. Or shedding off.
So the seal, a lot of these types of techniques were also originally written in metaphoric terms that would make no sense to a beginner.
Okay.
And then once somebody starts to learn about the practices and puts their time into it, they'll start to get the nuance. You see, and they'll make the association. So a seal means sealing your thoughts, locking your mind into something. That's what we talked about with the mudras. The term lock is another thing called a bandha, which is literally physically locking a part of your body by squeezing muscles. And there's fewer of these. You know, there's a root lock, which is women know the Kegel exercises to tone the vaginal muscles, and the men can do the same thing with the sphincter muscle, and you lock those muscles. So there's a physical component to the locks, whereas folding your hands in prayer, which is the mudra or seal, is somewhat passive, if you will. There's no physical force involved. So that's the difference between the seal and the lock. But the reason for the lock then, of course, when you get into the subtle levels, is when you close something, like if you just take your fist and your hand and you make a fist, and you hold that for a little bit and then you release, you have a new experience of the blood circulation through your hand.
You can sense the flow.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
You see, it builds a little pressure. Just
right.
Like, you know, you hold the hose and you fold it in half and you let the hose go, and then the water pressure pushes it out, you know, in a pretty forceful stream. So in that case, your blood gets held back a little bit by the fist, and then it rushes out. Well, when you do a different lock in different parts of your body, you do the same thing with the blood there, and it may cause a cleansing for a moment when you're holding the lock, and then the blood will rush in. And then after that, you start to feel energy pathways because the energy rushes forward, so it allows you to feel things that you may not recognize. And then you can start to see how the energy is moving in your body. But see, this stuff won't make much sense until somebody does all these things with breathing and starts to learn how to relax their body so that there's no muscle blockages. And they start to feel a little energy flow through their system. And what that does is just makes you more sensitive. And when they use the term block, somebody is blocked in their heart or, you know, blocked in one part of their life, they may have a physical sensation that they can recognize, and then you can work on it from the body as well as the mind.
Right. So maybe someone is blocked in the solar plexus.
Yes.
And there's a sensation there.
Right.
Okay.
Say that's usually related to, like, drive or using your personal power in the solar plexus. And a person might hunch forward, which would further clamp down on the solar plexus. Mm-hmm. You see, like, if you sit up straight, you'll notice that there's an open flow of movement and breath. And if you just lean forward the slightest amount, the rib cage closes down, pushing on the solar plexus, and then you can't take a deep breath, so you don't have any power in your words or in your thoughts because you're feeling a little weak, and that can be brought on by fear or low self-esteem, you know, by being told you're no good and believing it, and then you can sit up straight, take a deep breath in, and say, you know, well, I am no good, but you're not stopping me. Yeah, that's right. I'm not very smart.
Yeah.
I'm not very smart. You're right. That's why I'm going to work so hard, and I'm going to prove you wrong. And then you sit up straight and you take a deep breath and you go for it.
That's it. Powerful.
So there's always these. Yeah, what's that?
I was just saying, I love it. I love that. Wait, Warlord has another question.
Go ahead, Warlord.
You're great. He says, what is Dr. Butera's thoughts? What are the thoughts about yoga and aging?
Let's see.
I know. Because I know there is a book about the Fountain of Youth that does illustrate, I think, 5 different yoga poses that is supposed to suspend or, you know, ease the process of aging.
Okay. Absolutely. If you think about what it is that causes aging, blood circulation in the body decreases. And one of the things that yoga poses help the physical body with is increased circulation and also increased circulation to the brain. And so I think as the body, you know, ages, it loses its efficiency a certain amount each year, depending on the person. And then there's less blood flow literally to the brain, and that tells the brain I'm old. Well, if you do a pose where you put your feet up in the air and you allow the blood to flow back into the head, you're telling the body that I must be young because I have all this blood in my brain.
And
then
you're, great.
Then, yeah, then your glands function better. So I'm sure they talked about that's called the youthful pose, is what we call the shoulder stand, or just the elevation of the feet above the heart.
Okay.
Of course, a heart patient needs to be careful with this so that their blood pressure will elevate a little bit when they do this. Somebody who's healthy will be invigorated. And then I think the overall stuff we talked about with breathing and energy, of course, is also a circulation piece.
Right.
The thinking patterns of an old person are rigid, correct? Oh, the in the old days,
correct.
It was like this. Well, think of any old person you know who seems youthful. They usually act young, like they think young. They're like, wow, that's
right.
Neat. Tell me more about that. And they want
right.
to learn the newest style, or they're interested in the latest diet, yet they're 79. You're wondering, like, why are you so fascinated by this? You're 79. You're 85.
Right.
Well, you know, what do you want to learn for? Well, they just have a youthful way about them, and then you feel all this energy. You see, so that's part of how they may not reverse dying, but they reverse aging. See the difference?
There is a huge difference. I mean, the quality of life.
I think you're probably a big fan of Bernard Jensen.
I'm not familiar.
You're not familiar with Bernard Jensen? He's an herbalist from California, who talked a lot about this type of stuff. He was a chiropractor and did a lot of the 80, you know, he's one of the herbalists who promoted the 80%, you know, fresh or raw type foods.
Okay.
Just similar to some of the things that you write about on your website.
Right. I'm going to have to look him up.
Oh,
but,
yeah,
you
do. Jensen.
Okay. I've got it down. We're down to that last 2 minutes of the show. Didn't that go quick?
It sure did.
I'm hoping that you'll come back again. I think we've just touched the tip of the iceberg here.
Oh,
but quickly, before we say our farewells, I would love for you to share with our listeners how they can contact you and get a hold to the Yoga Living magazine.
Sure. If they, you know, the title of the book, Pure Heart of Yoga, you can go to the website pureheartofyoga.com. There we also have a workbook that you can download, a few yoga poses you can watch, and you can then contact our different websites through that. We have one for the Yoga Center that we, you know, that we operate, and then one for the Yoga Living magazine. The magazine, so you know, is a holistic magazine. It has some very interesting articles. It is one of those regional magazines for the Philadelphia area.
Okay.
In terms of that, I know everybody out is mostly out in your way. But if they go to the website, I think they might find some further resources. Again, the pureheartofyoga.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Doctor.
It's been a pleasure.
Again, it's been a pleasure. It's been fun, too. A yoga instructor and teacher with a sense of humor. Beautiful. Combination. Well,
all
I
right.
Thank everyone so much for joining us this evening. I thank you for your wonderful questions, Warlord X. Thank you for joining us if you're listening at a future time in a podcast. And remember, illumination, healthy food for the mind, body, and soul.
This is Tamara Westwood, your host, signing off. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Please send all comments and ideas to Tamara@IlluminationsSoulTherapy.com. Remember to join us live on Blog Talk Radio by logging into blogtalkradio.com/illuminations. And never miss a show by subscribing to the free podcast at iTunes Store. Search iTunes Podcast for Illuminations, healthy food for the mind, body, and soul.